Okay, I had trouble getting here the other day. I was 2 hours late leaving Ithaca. Consequently, I spent the afternoon in Las Vegas and arrived here at 1 a.m. in the morning. And along the way, I lost my slides. So I put together a new set, and they're not as fancy and as complete as they might have been otherwise. On this validation, we've been doing this for a number of years now, so I've been giving this talk. But I want to kind of preface that some things are changing. Actually, they've been changing all along. We started out, we were going to write guidelines, and therefore I wish Mike luck in writing guidelines, because we started out, we thought we knew the scenario. We wrote the guidelines, and the first thing the company sent us tests that didn't fit what we expected them to send us at all. And so things have continually changed with as the technology changes, and now when they're going to start doing stuff with thousands of SNPs, when we started out assuming one, things are going to change. One of the things that changed was initially when we had just a few markers, we would analyze the actual genotype. They would send us the genotypes of each marker. These were all SNPs. So they'd be AA, AT, TT, whatever. And we would evaluate what's the effect of each of the magnitude of the favorable alleles at each of these and combine them into a table, which is on our website. And we just call it a genotypic table, but it gives you the value of each of the possible genotypes. Now, that was feasible when we had three SNPs. Now we're dealing we're still in the relatively small, other than one of MMI's, which has over 100, we're dealing in the 10 to 20 kind of range. But there's no way in hell we can make a table of all possible genotypes that you could look at and decide. So what we do, though, is now take that information in those numbers, the genotypic effect, it's an additive effect, and call it an MBV. And the companies do this, and it's up to them to summarize their data, take all the marker information they have, and translate it into a number, which we call MBV. MMI's got their MGVs, Bovigen, I don't know if they've still got them, the GEPDs. Everybody's got a different name, but the name we adopted was the generic one since nobody had copyrighted it. It was MBV. It's analogous to an EPD, except it's on the animal scale, so it's twice as big. But the notion is, if you look at the differences between MBVs, that's a prediction of a difference in their phenotypes. If you take it by half, it's a prediction of their progeny, because it's only the additive part. And actually, taking the half and looking at the progeny is probably the most correct. So now what we do, we don't even get the genotype data. We just get the MBVs. So we get this score that goes from a big number to a small number that reflects the information in each animal's genotype. And then using that, we see in our data, the data we have to use for validation, is there an association between that MBV and the trait of interest? And makes our life much simpler, because we just got one number to deal with, and the analyses are all pretty much the same. It does, however, make the life of the companies a bit more difficult, because they've got to put those numbers together. And if they do a poor job of that, even if they've got the right set of markers, things aren't going to work so well. The other thing which is about to change or is changing, Mike mentioned the difficulty we have finding appropriate data. We really started, the markers were all for carcass traits, and we had the Carcass Merit Project data available. And we would request permission from the breed associations, can we use your data in this validation? And they virtually always said yes, sometimes not immediately, but we pretty much got, eventually could get We've about used up those data, and now they're starting to come up with traits that we have no data whatsoever. So one of the things that at our NBCC Advisory Council meeting the other day, they approved a notion which still, at least in my mind, is a third party, independent validation, but it sort of puts the onus on the company or allows the company to help. They can find the populations, work out the agreements. The key is that the genotype, the genotypic data, the MBVs, and the phenotypes are going to come to us or some other independent group for analysis prior to the company looking at them. So there's no way you can accuse the company of fudging either the phenotypes or the MBVs. And this allows, it gets more people on the ground finding these populations, and we hope it will speed things up. The other thing we have done out of necessity, and there's nothing wrong with it in my mind, is up until recently, the analyses were always done, the data, since we had the Karkus-Merritt project data stored at Cornell, everything, the genotypes came to Cornell, and we previously had a postdoc that would do the analyses, and more recently, Kathy Hanford at Nebraska does them for us. But we have, in a recent case, which I'll get to, it's been more dispersed in that the people that have the phenotypes are quite willing to analyze them using the markers, but they don't want to give up those phenotypes. So we no longer always combine all the phenotypes into one analysis. We may have several analyses, and I'll give you an example of that in a minute. Now, with that background, what I'm going to do is basically run through. We have three companies providing markers, and I'll probably piss all three of them off without. So you forewarned, you're all going to be. I'm not a marketer. Provigen, which is now Pfizer Animal Genetics. The last panel that we validated for them was quality grade, and that was in 2006. I presented those results here 2 years ago. Right now, we have no contact regarding current or pending validations. And just because it's one that is out there and people are interested in it, we have not yet been asked to look at B deficiency. So, and I don't mean that. We've struggled with terminology, how to put up here that just because we haven't been asked is we don't look upon it as a negative in the sense that it's just that they, for some reason, didn't choose to ask, and so we have nothing really to say about that particular panel. Sometimes they could ask and we have no data and we couldn't validate it even if they did ask. I don't know if that's happened yet, but it certainly could happen in the future. MMI. They have true marbling and true tenderness. I believe those are the correct terms. When these were rolled out at NCBA a few years ago, and Sund and I presented analysis of the Angus Karkus-Merritt data showing the associations between, and they were the first to come out with not a genotype or some numbers of stars, but an actual, what they call a genetic, molecular genetic value, a number that was supposedly in the units of the trait, and it relates to what you would see in the phenotype. They analyzed those data. We subsequently got those data as well, and we replicated her analysis and pretty much got the same results she did. This, however, does not qualify as a strictly a third-party independent analysis because they saw the data before we did. So we subsequently tried to get another group of Angus cattle and to see if there was an association. I might say that in the carcass mare cattle, it's sort of the same picture we've seen in all three companies. Tenderness, we can nail tenderness with even a small panel. Marbling is a more difficult trait to deal with. And I think partly you can see it's more difficult because there's many more management things that are going to influence marbling. People are managing cattle thinking of marbling. They're not managing cattle thinking of tenderness. So we always, thus far anyway, the tenderness in all three of them, and this one actually hasn't strictly gone through a validation yet because we're still trying to find that independent data set, a good independent data set, because the one we tried, there were some problems with the structure of the data that we did not know were there until we actually got into the analysis and found out most of our animals were bulls. And I'm not sure we should be testing a marbling panel on bulls. These are bulls in a feedlot, not yearling bulls. So this one is still ongoing. Identity profile. We looked at this several times, and the last analysis was in 2007. And out of this profile, there's lots of traits in the profile. I have trouble with the terminology on these, but really we're looking at the standard carcass traits here, except for tenderness, which is also counted as a carcass trait, but that one had been previously validated. Now, of these, we looked at these in the Angus and Charolais Carcass Merit Project data, so there have been nearly 800 head of cattle. And here's the summary slide that Allison put up here. This thing got a, yeah. It's, what we're seeing is for some of these traits, we're at or near significance. And back that is the has the in terms of a yes no has the lowest P. For others we're not very close to being significant. Okay. So these are now testing these as a use a selection tool. Remember, we've had, I don't know if anybody's talked about it here, using markers for selection or using markers for management. And they're two different things. And what we're interested in is selection because we're looking at the additive effects that we expect to get translated to progeny. It's my understanding that Igenity will have a new panel coming out or being put forward for validation in the near future. Any questions about these? The most recent ones, the ones we're working on right now, have been, are the, and haven't quite figured out what to call these. I think we're all struggling. People sort of refer to them as efficiency panels, but the actual traits that they're being developed on, in this case, for Igenity, they have a panel for dry matter intake. One is just straight intake, and one of them is the residual feed intake. And for those of you that, if you're an Australian, you call it net feed intake, and they're the same thing. And me not being a nutritionist, I never knew which one was supposed to be better. But there evidently this is almost a religious issue. As I was at a meeting with the Simmental put together, and we had there was quite a vigorous debate about which one. To me, I think there's a place for both of them. There's the ones that promote this. If you're going to plug it into a profit equation, this is what you need to know, is how much did they eat? If you got also got in there how much income you made, this is where the cost comes from. Now, if you're only going to put one number up, dry matter intake without knowing anything about the size of the animal, how fat it was, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, doesn't mean much. Whereas if you want just one number, this is the one you would want to have a look at. Now, for these, you need this individual intake data, and I gather the amount of intake data being collected is growing by leaps and bounds, but it hasn't quite got there where we had access to a lot of it or any of it, and it was difficult to find a data set suitable for testing these pants. So, and this was primarily through Igenity's initiative, but they contacted three groups that had intake data. And they contacted them, but then the analyses and the summarization all was independent of them. There were the group at Guelph, Steve Miller and his crew. Their data were crossbreds. Many of the sires were crossbred in this herd where the data come from. It's mostly Angus and Simmental breeding, but there's a little bit of everything in there. Then there's Denny Cruz data, or whoever we want to call it. You know, I call it Canada West group. And they have two herds, one are straight bred Angus and one are straight bred Charolais. The third group is in Australia. And I'm still not sure what that stands for, other than, but it's a group that's got a lot of money from the government, and they have invested a lot of money in collecting phenotypes on lots of different kinds of cattle in Australia, and they have made it available for validation, some of it anyway. And in there they had, and I've roughly group these because they had British cattle. I don't believe there were many continental cattle of any sort in here. They're British. There were some straight Brahmins, and then what they call tropically adapted composites. They would be some just Brahmin cross composites. There's some Santa Gertrudis in there. There's also some Belmont Reds. But there's two pure indicas, pure Taurus, and then mixtures. The Igenity, for each of these traits, they derive molecular breeding values based on data, three different kinds of data. So they had three different panels. The one is just, they combined all their Boss Taurus data. So this, I sort of considered a sort of a general purpose. If all we know are their Taurus cattle, this might be what we would use. And we could test this on the Canadian data, because they're all Taurus, and the Taurus from CRC. They had an Angus panel that came, obviously, just from Angus data. And we had the Denny Cruz Angus and a recent group of Angus in Australia. Then the third panel they developed, these were developed from data from Camp Cooley on Brangus cattle. And this panel was tested, we tested it mainly on these, we tested it on stuff that had Brahmin in it. It was the CRC tropically adapted. We also see if there was an association in those pure Brahmins. Okay? And there's one thing that I'm beginning to think, and we'll learn more as we go. Most of the markers that have been developed and most of the panels that have been, and somebody was saying, I think I'm right, that this 50K SNP chip is developed from TARS, which may have implications if we're going to try to find something that's going to influence, affect these. Because you got to remember, the Boss TARS and the Boss Indicus, they're separate domestications in two different parts of the world. So their common ancestors are way, way back in time. And so if there's any common mutation between those two batches, it's been there. For a very long time. And typically what we see,
is this on?
Yeah. Is oftentimes when we look at markers, at least when we were looking at got the individual genotypes, there'd be polymorphisms in the TARS and virtually none in the Brahmins. So the Brahmins are just there's two alleles, and you'd only find one of them in Brahmins. So it just can't work in Brahmins because they're not. And that partly may be where the markers are coming from. They're developed from TARS cattle and not from a mixture. Now, and that means, whoops. We're most likely going to need different panels for Indicus and TARS. Now, however, when we look at these crosses, then we can start to pick things up because they've got genes in there that are coming from both places. And it may be that we get a panel that would work in these kinds of cattle because it's picking between TARS and Indicus genes. But that panel would not work if we looked in just Boss TARS because there are no Brahmin genes there. Or it isn't going to work in the Brahmin, the straight Brahmin, so I don't have those up there, because there's no TARS genes there. Or I guess in our American Brahmins, there's a few floating around, but not many. And so it may be that we are going to need, if not breed-specific, at least TARS, Indicus, and the composite kind. Results, just briefly. We didn't receive these data. Each group did the analysis. The analysis was basically the same in each group. It was just looking at those, and we did that regression on the MBV. There were some differences in the models because, for example, the Guelph data had to handle the crossbred, so they had some breed effects and heterosis effects and things like that, that would be slightly different. But basically the same analysis. But it did mean that we could not do, in the past, we always, if we had, say, like in the profile that I presented previously, we analyzed the Angus data, we analyzed the Charlet data, and then we threw them all together, but with the different types and different contemporary groups, and got combined estimates. Here we could, and that in some sense made it simpler because we just had one analysis to look at. Here we've got several because we've got multiple populations, and then it gets a question of trying to eyeball to see, because things never work out perfectly. the two Taurus panels, the general one and the Angus one, there's some inconsistent results, some promising results, and we're trying to figure out whether the promising results are inconsistent or if the inconsistent results really are promising. So we aren't ready to make a claim on either of those two panels. The Brahman influence panel, however, as I said, it had no associations in the straight bred Brahmins. It was not associated with in either that or nor in the straight bred Taurus, but it was definitely significantly associated with DMI and RFI, these two panels, in these Australian tropically adapted cattle. And these, as I said before, were composites with Brahman, and I guess then specifically the Santa Gertrudis and the Belmont Reds. And Allison just pointed out to me, there was a press release yesterday that this panel for the Brahman influence cattle is on the market? Awfully close. And I want to say thank you, Stuart. It does specifically say in there, it doesn't just say DMI and RFI, it does say Brahman influence. And so that's the population that it should be used for. Okay. Our website is being updated sort of as we speak. Allison has a version about ready to go, so it soon will be up and running with the most recent results in it. And if there are any questions at this time, I'll be happy to try to answer.
Steve, let me bring this mic back, Steve, and that way everybody can hear.
As far as the 50K panel goes, we have successfully used that on the Loray cattle. About 70% or more of those SNPs are informative in indicas.
Okay.
So they're not all. And the SNPs in this panel were not derived from the 50K panel.
No. Yep. We have yet to get anything from a 50K chip.
And I'd like to say that it's very curious that a set of markers that were defined in a Canadian group of cattle have been found to work in Bos Indicus influenced cattle, and I have to explain that to my funders, so if you could help me.
Now say that again. The
fact that a set of markers that were defined in a Canadian population of cattle is workable in a Bos Indicus influenced cattle, and if somebody could help me explain that to my funders,
well,
I'd appreciate it.
First of all, those were not they weren't developed in Canadian. Well, your SNPs were developed, but the SNP panel they took the markers, but the actual values they put on the markers came out of those
Cooley
data.
It was a flippant statement.
Okay.
Any other questions? Well, thanks, Dick. We appreciate the efforts of NBCEC and your crew, and look forward to your continued support as this technology is further developed and enhanced as we go down the road. At this time, I'm going to call on Mike Tess again. As we indicated in the opening comments, one of the goals of the BIF Commission has been to also develop or start work on some guidelines that can be used for BIF to to uniformly utilize the data as it becomes available. As was mentioned earlier, Dr. Larry Cundiff is in charge of putting together the next set of guidelines, but Mike and his commission have put a lot of time and effort into starting on this, and again, I think the intention of this session is to try to get some discussion and some feedback relative to the development of these guidelines as we look forward to implementing this technology more widely in the industry. So, Mike, I'll turn it over to you.